Hello, welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. Today I talk to a Nobel Peace Prize winner who invented microfinance and has devoted his life to stopping poverty. He developed the Grameen Bank, a banking system founded on principles of trust and solidarity, where 97% of the loans he gives out are paid back in full. His latest book argues that we need a new economic system based on a more realistic vision of human nature. Welcome, Professor Muhammad Yunus. I wonder if we could start with your early background, because you came from a very large family, didn't you?
Yes, this probably is a typical family in Bangladesh. It's a pretty large number of children. We are seven brothers and two sisters, come from a very low-income family, from the village. So my first education started in a village school, hardly any facility or anything. Then my family moved into a city to start a tiny little business. That's why I came to the city and started in a local city school. That's how I grew up and went to educational institution in the city and did Dhaka University and then got the Fulbright scholarship, came to United States, did my PhD and became assistant professor in one of the universities in USA. I was teaching there. And in 1971, when Bangladesh became an independent country, I resigned from my job. I immediately went back and became the head of the department of one newly built university called Chittagong University.
And now founding microcredit, I mean, that has absolutely changed the face of the world for so many, really for millions of people. Tell me how that began.
Well, it became out of desperation, actually. The country was going through a terrible economic situation. We had famine, people were dying, and I was teaching economics. I felt terrible that I teach elegant theories of economics, which has no meaning in the life of the people, just next to the university campus. So I thought I should go out in the village and see if I can be helped to other people. My immediate objective to see if I can make myself useful to another human being right next to me. So I started doing tiny little things in that village every day, whatever I could do. Then I saw how the loan sharking is spreading in the village, giving tiny little money and grab everything people have. And I felt so horrible that this happening right in front of my eyes, right next to the university campus, and I can't do anything about it. So one desperate idea came to my mind, why don't I lend the money myself? If I lend the money, they don't have to go to the loan shark and the problem will be solved. I don't have to have a research project over 3 years or something like that. So I started lending money out of my own pocket. And it became very popular. It started growing and growing. It went beyond the boundaries of the village. And I was feeling very happy that it helps people. And loan sharks cannot touch them anymore because I'm there to lend them the money. It continued. And over a long period of time, several years next, thought, why don't I create a bank out of it? I started in 1976 and created a bank in 1983. Called it Grameen Bank or Village Bank and started expanding it throughout the country. Today, Grameen Bank works all over the country, 80,000 villages. In every single village, Grameen works. And we have over 9 million borrowers. 97% of them are women. And they take small loans of $30, $40, start a business and become an entrepreneur. And they have a little savings account in their bank and gradually that savings increases. Last year, we lent out over $2.5 billion in loans. And the total savings exceeded the total loans. So they have more than $2.5 billion in their savings account. It's quite a transformation that takes place in people's life. The idea is spread all over the world, including many rich countries, France, UK, Norway, Sweden, Italy, and so many other countries. We started a program in the United States called Grameen America. Right now, we have 20 branches all over the United States, 7 branches in New York and other branches in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Houston, Boston, and so on. We have nearly 100,000 borrowers, 100% women. All of them are women. Loaned out about $1 billion right now. And we hope to expand it in the next few years to having 500,000 borrowers and giving out $10 billion in loan. Usual startup loan in the USA is between $1,000 to $1,500. And it transforms people's life.
Now, you had many detractors at the start. You said that this would never work. If you lent money to poor people, you'd just basically never get it back. And I think it's really interesting that you point out that most of your borrowers are women. And I wonder why that is and if that affects the rate of payback.
Well, we worked with men too. We had no problem getting the money back. The reason we started focusing on women was because I'm critical of the conventional banks in Bangladesh that don't lend money to any women, even a rich woman. So there's a discrimination. And I accuse them of that discrimination. Not only you don't lend money to poor, you don't lend money to women as a whole group of people, not just poor women. They said that, well, what can we do? They don't come to us, etc. But I said, no, your rules are biased towards men. Then when I began, I wanted to make sure half the borrowers in my program are women. So it was a deliberate decision. In the beginning, women resisted. They said, no, don't give the money to me. I don't know anything about money. I never touched money in my life. Give it to my husband. So we had to go back again and again, build confidence in them. Look, it's not such a terrifying thing. And once you can overcome your fear, it will be done. It took 6 years to achieve that goal of 50-50 women. And then we saw money going to the family through women brought so much more benefit to the family than the same amount of money going to the men. So seeing it repeatedly, we raised the question, why 50-50? Why don't we go for the women? Because it brings so much more benefit to the family. It's very transparent, very easy to recognize. So we started focusing on them. Gradually, it started increasing. Very soon, we hit the 97% of the borrowers are women. Then we stopped, so let's just keep it this way. So ever since, we are 97% women. But in the USA, we went in 2008, we made sure 100% are women. No men were ever taken into the business of that. So there it is increasing as a women program, as a focusing on women. Even throughout the world, everywhere we see microcredit functioning, those organizers of the microcredit always focuses on women because it makes so much sense to do it this way to impact the family.
Mm-hmm. Because, of course, then they have much more control over what happens to the education of their children.
Education of the children, food of the children, and the future of the family and building of the house. They pay more attention to the families and future than men do. So we said, that's what we are looking for, future and the children. And we started noticing that and started providing that. As a result, the whole new second generation in the families of Grameen borrowers, the 9 million families, all children are educated. So we have no problem. This is not a repetition of the illiteracy of the parents, the mother and the father. Nobody ever in their history never went to school. So we kind of put a break to that history and say from now on it will be education, literacy and connectivity and so on.
Now, obviously, the loan sharks can't have liked what you were doing particularly, but I know that within the bank you've also had some political struggles. It's not been easy for you.
Yeah, it's always there. When you do something new, there's always a problem. Men were unhappy, religious people were unhappy. They thought we were destroying the religion. Men thought that we were taking away their authority, natural authority to be the boss in the family. So having another person in the family who has access to funds and so on didn't make them feel comfortable.
But winning the Nobel Prize, of course, must have made an enormous difference then.
It did. First of all, it did an enormous amount of credibility that this is real, this is not something of a storytelling, this is a concrete. And also it gives attention. Global attention. We have been talking about microcredit and so on, but we could reach that kind of audience to explain how to do that. And suddenly, Nobel Peace Prize comes. Everybody wants to hear what it is. Everybody wants to tell the story. Press became interested. They made all the stories we want them to do. So that way, it became a familiar word. It got a new life of expansion and attention. Policymakers started attention. Mm. Academics started paying attention. This introduced courses on microcredit, having departments of microcredit, having PhD programs in microcredit. So it created a lot of effect after that.
Mm. And of course, you do great work yourself going out and speaking about it. I know that you're ranked, I think, number 2 of the world's top 100 thinkers. I mean, all of these plaudits coming in for this thing that really has changed the face.
It helps a lot. And not only we did the microcredit, along the microcredit, we did something else. We tried to address other problems, not just financial problems, healthcare problems, housing problems, sanitation problems, children's malnutrition problem. So every time I see a problem, I create a business to solve it. But that business has a unique feature. Unlike the conventional bank, these businesses are not oriented towards making money personally from anybody. These are problem-solving companies. We started explaining to people and gave it a name, call it social business, defining it by saying it's a non-dividend company to solve human problems. And we kept on saying that, look, something wrong in the capitalist system. Capitalist system interprets human being as a self-serving being, driven by self-interest, meaning selfishness. I said, no, human beings are not about 100% selfishness. Human being is a combination of selfishness and selflessness. Mm. Unfortunately, capitalist system never recognized the selfless part of it, a selfless part of human being. I said, well, all I'm doing to allow this selfless part to come into the picture of business world, create a business based on selflessness other than just the selfishness. So the whole world is a selfish world right now. So we are introducing the balancing factor, opening up that, create social business. Every business can create a social business. Every person can create a social business alongside their conventional business or whatever they want to do. Now, that idea is also getting attention because of the previous attention on the microcredit. So we can explain, and that is becoming more popular. I just wrote a book on that issue of social business, and I call the book as a world of three zeros. Zero poverty, zero unemployment, zero net carbon emission. If you can create this world of three zeros, we have overcome the problem of this new old civilization, which is based on greed and selfishness, and we can create a world with selflessness and on human values as a human being as we are, rather than an artificial human being, which is assumed in the cell, in the capitalist system. Mm.
You're using the word business, which implies obviously, and this is the real world that we live in, a capitalist system, there must be some profit involved in it at some point.
Yeah. See, the distinction between social business and conventional business, the whole business is created to make money personally. The more money I make, more successful business I am. So objective of the business is making money, making profit. We changed the objective clause. We said purpose of the social business is to solve problems. So suddenly from profit making, we become problem solving companies. And what happens to the profit? Company makes profit, but the owners don't want to take this profit personally. It's plowed back into the business because it is a selfless business. I'm not personally benefiting from the company. Where 100% of the benefit of the business in the conventional business comes to the owner. In selfless business, nothing comes to the owner. Everything goes to the people for whom this business is created. And we created businesses of healthcare, businesses of environmental degradation, waste management, and so on. These are all created to solve the problem. How to bring solar energy in the homes, in the villages of Bangladesh. We have a company, a solar energy company in Bangladesh, which has now nearly 2 million households delivering solar energy in household level as a business proposition, but as a social business proposition, mm-hmm. not to make money, but to sustain itself, get the money back so that you can plow back the money and continue to work. Unlike charity organization, we could have done this as a charity organization, then the money would have gone out, it will never come back to us. That's mm-hmm. a charity. We said, no, once you get the money out and you can bring it back, then it becomes very powerful. Charity money has only one life. It goes out and it's done, finish. It never comes back to the picture again. Mm. If you do it in a social business way, then the money goes out, does the work and come back. And then you use it again and again and again and again. So it's an endless life for the social business money. That is the power of the social business. And we say the social business is a business, but with the objective of charity. You take the objective of charity and you put a business engine behind it. And suddenly it becomes social business. In charity, you don't want to benefit personally. Similarly, you don't want to benefit personally from the social business. But the money recirculates. Money continues to work. Investor can take back the investment money. This is my money, I get it back. But you own the company, but the remaining profit is always plowed back. And you can grow, you can expand. And this idea is spreading many, many countries now. So we are very happy about that.
So tell me the main premise behind a world of three zeros.
The main premise is, I see, a very strong one. The whole world today is creating enormous wealth concentration. All the wealth goes to fewer and fewer hands. If you look globally, the recent information from Oxfam is 8 people in the world own more wealth than the bottom 50% of the population of the entire world. So you can imagine what's happening. And that number 8 was not number 8 a couple of years back. It was more than 8. Now it squeezed to 8. Next year or year next, it will be one person who will be owning more wealth than the bottom 50% of the people. So that's the speed in which wealth concentration is going on. And I try to explain by saying it's a whole big mushroom on the top, which is the wealth of all the world. But it's owned by fewer and fewer hands. And that mushroom is growing faster and faster. Number of owners becoming smaller and smaller. The stem which hangs from the mushroom becoming thinner and thinner because that wealth becomes smaller and smaller. But that is the wealth which belongs to 99.9% of the population of the entire world. So the 99.9% of the world population gets its fewer and fewer wealth, a fraction of the wealth of the world, and the entire world hands are big. I said, this is totally unsustainable. It is not really economy. It is mockery of economy when you have all the wealth in the hands of people. And this is a terrible thing which will explode. I say it's a ticking time bomb. Politically, economically, it will explode very soon. So unless we become conscious and pay attention how to stop that wealth explosion and then make sure the wealth comes back to the people, how to do that. So then I suggest what are the procedures to do that. If you do the social business, wealth doesn't go into the fewer hands because in social business, nobody takes money for themselves. So no contribution to the wealth concentration. Then I put another point, which is a flaw in the conventional economic theory, the capitalist theory. They expect all human beings to work for somebody else. I said, this is totally insulting to human being. Why anybody should work for anybody else? Human beings is complete by himself and herself. They are independent person. They are creative person. They are do-gooders. That's our history. All throughout the history, we were problem solvers. We are go-getters. We are farmers. We did our own thing. But suddenly, when you come to the formal economy of the new world, because of the theory that you made, we are asked, no, you have to work for somebody else. So we prepare our children to get ready to work for somebody else. Mm. It's just a shame. Why don't you tell our children, look, you have two options. Either you can work for somebody or you can be an entrepreneur. You are born as an entrepreneur. Why didn't you find your way out? And all people can become entrepreneur. So now we are promoting that all human beings are entrepreneur. That's the fate of the entrepreneurship. And I also remind that artificial intelligence is coming. You cannot resist it. It's already there. And with artificial intelligence, drivers will be gone. Taxis will be running around with no driver. All the trucks around the world will be without any driver. And many other vehicles will be running without any driver. Factories will be running without any people. You'll have 10,000 people working in a factory. Now you'll have 10 people working in the same factory because artificial intelligence will take. Then all the people will be losing their jobs. I said, have you ever imagined what kind of world it would be, which is coming in 10 to 15 years? What kind of life it will be that we the people sitting around doing nothing and artificial intelligence is running the economy? So these are unemployed people at the mercy of the charity of the government to give them a welfare payment and so on. I said, that's not an economy that we should be looking forward to. Technology is a good idea. We support technology because that's what changes our life. But technology has to have some limitations too. I give the example of medicine. Pharmaceutical companies, when they develop a medicine, of heart, liver, whatever disease you have, you develop a medicine. You spend lots of years in laboratory to design that particular medicine. Then you have to go to the government regulators, the people who want to approve and disapprove your medicine. They will go through another test, another thing, and finally they get approval or disapproval. I said, there is no approval and disapproval process in technology. You can destroy the whole world with your technology, but nobody's watching, nobody's giving you permission whether you can use it or not. I said, it's a very important time right now to come up with this idea that if you want to start, if you have developed a technology, first you have to get approval whether it harms people. If it harms people, like the medicine, we don't allow you to do that. And this artificial intelligence which takes away your job, this is a case where government permission and so on has to be approval, has to get approval process so that they cannot go and take away people's job. So I said, in any case, we have to become entrepreneurs because that's what we are. If we become entrepreneurs, we'll be hiring artificial intelligence for working for us rather than replacing us. So this is one direction that we have to think about.
And of course, the third big strand is all about carbon emissions.
Yes, that's the third zero. Zero poverty, zero unemployment, zero net carbon emission. Yes, this is very important. We are blowing up the whole world by not listening to that, not approving that. Luckily, Paris Agreement came. It took lots of years, more than 40 years of hard work, pursuing the government, pressurizing the government. civil society running around to make sure everybody understood the emergency of the situation. And before we get to the point of no return, so that we can make decision and stop global warming and protect the planet. And that's what the Paris Agreement came. And then comes Trump, then comes withdrawal of Trump, again a very negative thing. And it's a very kind of unusual thing where we're all unified to protect the planet with the Paris Agreement and so on. At the same time, we have nuclear bombs, nuclear weapons, stockpiles of 23,000 warheads waiting to be blown off anytime you want. And you can be by design. You suspect somebody is going to attack you, or you want to attack before anybody else to attack you. It could be accidental, and you destroy the whole planet. So you are trying to protect the planet, and at the same time you are moving around and with the promotion of the nuclear weapons. USA recently made a decision to refurbish the old stockpile that they have because it's an old stockpile. They took a couple of $1 trillion just to refurbish the stock of it. I said, this is insanity in extremity that you do such kind of thing. I said, we have to protect ourselves from the extreme nature of our thing that we get involved. Why do we have to blow up the world to protect ourselves? What does it mean? So anyway, this is the danger of the planet. And luckily, we have this Paris Agreement. Let's stay with the Paris Agreement. And we make sure nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction cannot continue. It comes to zero level. So that this is something we disown at the same time. It's not just a protecting the planet, in just not for the global warming, protecting the planet from the crazy people who want to blow it up.
These are all fantastic ideas and they've proven most of them to work so far. But yet, as you point out, you have somebody completely crazy, ostensibly in charge of the free world, who has rejected the Paris Climate Agreement, who is out and out a capitalist, who is in it for the wealth creation of the few and not of the many. So can these wonderful ideas actually work in a world where this is our reality?
Ultimately, what I go back to answer that question, I said, look, it all depends on you and me, us. What is it that we have inside of us? Do you want to protect? Then we'll protect. Resist those politicians who want to destroy that. Resist those businesses who want to concentrate the planet and so on. They cannot concentrate their wealth if I become an entrepreneur because I'm not working for him anymore. If I don't work for him, there's no way he can get to this wealth concentration. So I pick up the wealth for myself. And there's billions of people who are picking up their wealth because we are all entrepreneurs. Nobody's working for him or her to concentrate all the wealth of the world into fewer and fewer hands. I said about the 99.9% of the people having tiny, tiny fraction of wealth, and only 0.5% or less than 0.5% will own the bulk of the wealth of the world. But if you look at the geographical distribution, all this wealth is concentrated on probably 6 countries of the world. And the rest of the world doesn't have anything. But in each of these countries, whatever the little they have, you'll see, again, 99% of that little have only controlled by few people. So you have the monopoly of economic power and then monopoly of political power. With a nuclear weapon gives you monopoly power because your voice has to be heard because they take you at ransom. Mm. If you don't listen, I have the bomb. I can do anything I want. So people get the message. So you have the two monopolies working together. That's not a safe world.
But we can make it safer?
We can make it safer because that's what I'm saying, that we have to express ourselves. We have to tell our children, look, this is the future. And they have to understand that business is only not for making money. We can solve all the problems that we have around us if we bring our creative power and take our greed out of the picture. This is, the whole thing is the seed of greed planted by the capitalist system. That seed is one which is blown up into this proportion. Today we are talking about the wealth concentration.
Professor Yunus, thank you so much. Professor Muhammad Yunus has written A World of 3 Zeros. He is, of course, the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The book looks at the new economics of zero poverty, zero unemployment and zero carbon emissions. It's published by Scribe. It's out now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Thanks to the production team of George McDonough and Daphne Karnitsis. Our researcher was Chloe Karnitsis. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.